जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर सत। हे डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा गोकुलानंद की जय। श्री श्री गौरताय की जय। श्री श्री जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्रामय की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे। All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। It's a very interesting and important topic that I was asked to speak on today, memorizing our shlokas from our books, from our scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. Now, before we really get into some useful techniques of memorizing, I just want to speak about the principle of memorization, let alone memorizing the Sanskrit verses, but simply the task of memorizing. Today, in the modern concept of education, memorization is not considered very highly, and emphasis is generally given only on analysis, on communication, critical thinking, and things like this, which is of course nice, which is important as an element of education. However, that does not mean that memorization should not be there, or that we should dismiss it because we call it rote learning. blind rote learning. Actually, memorization has its role and its utility and importance in the process of education and specifically in the development of the human intellect and consciousness. Now, you know, it doesn't mean that you will have only memorization and nothing else. The other skills and the aspects of education should simultaneously be developed as well. In traditional Vedic culture, memorization played a very important role because education happened primarily by repeating what they heard from the teacher, from the acharya, from the guru. Of course, there was a lot of practical service involved, there were practical realizations, there were stories, there were illustrative examples and many, many other things like that. But when it came to the text of the Vedas and the related scriptures, then the acharya or the guru would recite, the students would hear very attentively and they would repeat. And this process would continue on and on and on till they had learnt it. In the previous ages, the memory power of people was so strong that they could memorize things simply by hearing it, in most cases even once. And even if that was not possible, but just by repeating it several times, it was easy to remember. There was no written script necessary. There was no need for paper and pen or chalk and slate or whatever. It was simply oral and aural. O-R-A-L, which means spoken, and aural, A-U-R-A-L, meaning that which is heard. So Srila Prabhupada speaks about both these terms, oral as well as aural. And Srila Prabhupada calls the process of hearing as submissive oral reception. It might sound like technical jargon, but actually it's very meaningful. So when we hear, we have to be submissive. We have to be in a receptive mood. We have to be in a mood of humility. If we think that, you know, we know it all, or if we are proud of something, or if we have some selfish motive in the learning, then it is not as effective. So it has to be received in a submissive way, in a faithful way, in an eager way. So that is called submissive oral reception. Oral meaning through the ears. So we receive the sound vibration that the teacher is chanting through our ears. And all of us know the Srimad Bhagavatam pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and the famous verse Shravanam Kirtanam Vishno Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Mandanam Dasyam Sakhyam Atmanivedanam. So Iti Punsarpita Vishno Bhaktischen Navalakshana. So these Navalakshana, these nine methods or limbs of devotional service have been mentioned by Prahlad in this verse. And it is not by chance or by accident that Prahlad mentions a certain sequence, especially the first three. He mentions Shravanam, then Kirtanam, and then Smaranam. So it is very significant, this order. So Shravanam first means that first of all we have to hear. Now when we speak of memorization, there's no question of memorization unless we hear first or we read. Reading is also a kind of hearing. It's only that you're hearing through the eyes. The author is speaking in a sense. So we have to hear properly. So when we want to memorize anything, first and foremost we have to keep hearing or keep reading. Actually, hearing is even more effective than reading, actually. Even though reading may be considered a form of hearing in the modern day and age. But the more you hear, attentively, the easier it will be for us to remember. But hearing alone is not enough. So after Shravanam, there has to be Kirtanam, which means we recite what we have heard. It is only when the hearing and recitation happens that it can be said to be complete. That is when Smaranam or remembrance or memorization happens, truly. Now, this Shravanam Kirtanam, making a complete whole, is interesting. Now, we've all heard the phrase Sankirtan. That is what our movement is about. So what is the difference between Sankirtan and Kirtan? Now, it's a topic in itself. But suffice it to say that Sankirtan means perfect Kirtan, Samyak Kirtan. And Srila Prabhupada has given some nice insights about what makes Kirtan perfect. In other words, what transforms Kirtan into Sankirtan. Now, I won't go into other reasons, but I'll only talk about a reason that is specific for our purpose here. So he says that Kirtanam becomes perfect in the association of devotees because some are chanting or reciting and others are hearing. So when the chanting and the hearing, when the hearing happens, then the cycle is complete. So because of that complete cycle of hearing and then chanting and then hearing and then chanting, so that makes it complete. So therefore, in the process of education, of learning, of memorizing, this was so stressed in the Vedic system. So the students heard from the teacher very attentively, then they repeated it and repeated it on and on till they had thoroughly memorized it. Now, you have all read the Ramayana, I'm sure, the Valmiki Ramayana, or at least the storyline, you're aware of it. When Sita Devi came to stay in the ashram of Valmiki Muni, he looked after her and she gave birth to her twin sons, Lav and Kush. And it happened in a very timely manner for Valmiki Muni because he had composed the Ramayana. And in those days, as I mentioned, there was no paper and there was no method of writing, not because they lacked the technology or they weren't intelligent enough to know how to put things on paper, but because they didn't deem it necessary. Writing was considered like an inferior method of information storage. Information has to be stored up here. I'll share with you a little experience that I had several years ago. I had gone for Ayurvedic therapy to some place in South India. And there I met this one scholar who was also visiting for some reason. And he was actually in that for some Sanskrit research work in the library. So then somebody introduced him to me. He came to the room and I had just opened my bag and there were a host of books. I was carrying many of our ISKCON books there, so many books. So he asked me, so many books? So I said, yeah, because I don't know exactly how long I'll stay here. It may be a month. So then I want to utilize my time well and read. So he said, instead of carrying these books in your bag, you should carry it in your head. So I said, now, that's a tall order. And he himself had learned thousands upon thousands of shlokas. And he could just recite them like that very, very easily. So anyway, that point was noted. And I remembered then the importance of memorizing. Yes? So now we have this. So in the olden days, the process of learning was based upon hearing, not because of the absence of writing technology, but because it was considered inferior. And also, when you put things in writing, then you have to have methods of preserving it, and then it may get lost, somebody may steal it, it may get burnt in fire, Or if you store it in a computer, there may be a computer crash, or there may be some other way in which your data is lost. Yes? And then there's the question of copyright, and so many other problems associated with written knowledge, right? But when it's in your head, no copyright is a problem. And there are so many stories like this. You know, when Ramanujacharya went to North India, he wanted the Bodhayana Vritti, which was a commentary written by one sage, and he could not retrieve it. But one of his disciples, he read the book manuscript, and he memorized the entire manuscript, and then they left. And after they left, then the disciple actually had it put in writing in palm manuscripts. But remember, this was in Kali Yuga, only about 1,000 years ago or so. So even at that time, people had the power to do this kind of memorization. So by hearing, you preserve, you're memorizing, you preserve that knowledge in your head. And it's available to you anytime you want it. You're not dependent on bookshelves and storage, and then you don't find the book at the right time, and then you forget, you don't have access to that knowledge or that information. So that doesn't happen. So anyway, hearing, speaking, and then you keep on doing that, and then it's trapped in your head. So that is the traditional process of memorizing, of learning things. You keep on hearing it, you keep on hearing it, keep on chanting it. Remember, unless your shravanam is matched by kirtanam, it will not be so easy to memorize things. So we hear in the association of devotees, and then we recite, and then it becomes so much easier. Now, there was a Chinese historian. I think they call it I Sing, ETSING, but I think it's pronounced as Ye Jing. So this Ye Jing, he was a Buddhist monk, and he visited India many centuries ago, many, many centuries ago. And he recorded his experiences, and he was scholastically inclined, so he went to the universities, he went to the places where scholars would gather, and he got to know how they performed their scholarly activities, and he was struck with wonder to see the power of their memory and how much they had committed to heart, you know, to committed to memory. And he said he in his writings he extols the virtues of memorization, and he says that initially, you know, it may be hard to memorize, it is hard work, but by repeatedly memorizing, then what happens is that the intellect develops, and the sharpening of the medha shakti, in Sanskrit it's called the medha shakti, you know, the medha means the intelligence. So incidentally, the Srimad Bhagavatam mentions that memory is an important element or component of intelligence. So there are various types of intelligence, you know, it's not only academic intelligence. Somebody has mathematical intelligence but not intelligence for other things. Someone has musical intelligence, you know, they can grasp entire compositions at a go, but if you ask them to do calculus, then they will have nothing to do with it. They don't have the brain for that. So intelligence is of various types, but in each type of intelligence, the important component, one of the components, is memory. So when you nourish your memory and strengthen it, you're actually strengthening your intellect. So that your power of analysis becomes stronger. Because you see, our power of analysis is based on experience. And when you experience things, you remember them. And then that comes to your help when you want to take some decisions about something in the future. So then, as Yi Jing says, then the alphabets acquire a life of their own, whatever the words that we have memorized, and they translate into ideas in the mind, and then it becomes easy to remember what one has heard. And then Yi Jing says something interesting. He says that then what has been memorized in course of time, it emerges, it gushes out of the heart like a fountain. He says, he uses the word fountain. It comes out. And he says, I have seen this myself, he says. In other words, for all the rote learning that is much criticized nowadays, if the right things are memorized in the right manner, then these things will rise like a fountain at the right time and nourish the intelligence, nourish the capacity of the brain to understand, to grasp, to analyze, and so on. So therefore, we may not realize, we learned our tables, yes, when we were children. One ones are two, two twos are four. And when we were doing it, probably we didn't like it so much. It was quite a painful process. But now when you have to do quick calculations in your head, it comes so easy. You know, 7, 6, okay, 42. Immediately it comes to your mind. So it comes up there because you've memorized it. So even though we think what we've learned is a waste, it actually is not a waste. So yes, some things may be waste. So it really depends on the curriculum that we are taught. If we are taught things that are really of no value to us, then yes, that is a waste. So memorizing is not a waste. Whether it's a waste or not depends on what it is that you're memorizing. If you're memorizing something that is really useful, then it will never be wasted. It will always be helpful. Yes? So, in the process of memorizing, then our intelligence becomes strengthened, the realization comes to our mind. So, when children study Bhagavad Gita shlokas or the Bhagavatam shlokas and so on, so many mantras, once they memorize it, then what happens is they may not understand the meaning because they're too young. They don't have that capacity to understand. But because they've memorized it, at some point in time in future, when their knowledge, their intelligence, etc. has developed, and they've learnt more and more, and their capacity to understand abstract ideas and concepts advances, then what they have learned in their childhood will now be understood. So in the words of Yi Jing, it will come like a fountain and that realization will dawn. So initially it's only bookish knowledge, it may appear, what is called jnana. Jnana means knowledge. But when they grow up, because they've repeatedly been using it, and they're cultivating their analysis power, power of analysis, and they're learning in so many ways, then that gets transformed into vijnan. Vijnan means experienced knowledge, practical knowledge, in Srila Prabhupada's words. So then it never goes wasted. So when that child grows up and reads the Bhagavad Gita or hears, then the meaning of that verse actually flowers within that devotee's heart. It becomes so much more meaningful now, because the words are already, you know, in the memory. But the deeper meaning of it, the realization of it, also dawns within the heart. So I like this phrase a lot, like a fountain from the heart, it emerges. And it subsumes, it consumes the intellect and the consciousness. So that is how it used to be. And actually speaking, as far as memorizing Sanskrit verses is concerned, even if we don't understand the meaning, because they are from the Bhagavad Gita, from the Srimad Bhagavatam and other such scriptures, which contain transcendental sound vibration, so those words themselves are very purifying. They have their effect. Srila Prabhupada mentions that when there is thunder, the sound of thunder, the clapping of thunder, then everybody across the globe in whichever part of the world they reside in, they get one message, the same message. There is some fear that immediately comes into the heart when all of a sudden there's a loud clapping of thunder. Yes? We get startled and there's a momentary feeling of fear. So that happens to everybody across the globe. So similarly, even if one doesn't understand the meaning of the verses that one is learning in childhood, but because those words are transcendental, they have spiritual potency because they're non-different from Krishna, so they have a very powerful effect. They will still purify our heart. They will still create all auspiciousness within the heart. And they retain the potential to give us a deeper understanding, to give us a taste for scriptural studies and understanding and practice. They will give us a potential for further absorption in scriptural studies. So in this way, when one goes on studying like this, without understanding even, this is the benefit. Imagine how much will be the benefit if one actually understands the meaning. Now, this is called Kaimutya Nyaya. This is one of the aphorisms in Sanskrit. Kaimutya means kim uta. If for this so much, then for that how much? Okay? So, if without understanding the meaning, you get this kind of benefit, and then if you understand the meaning, if you're doing it with understanding and with faith, etc., further, then imagine how much more will be the benefit that you will get. Yeah? So we should not deride the process of learning Sanskrit verses merely because one doesn't understand the meaning of those verses. One must do it with faith, with devotion, and sincerity. Then the results will come. But of course, and now I come to the point of pronunciation. Even if we're not very good at pronouncing the Sanskrit for cultural reasons, for reasons of our upbringing, because we have not been exposed to the proper pronunciation of Sanskrit words and alphabets, we should make an attempt to do so. Because this is very important in the process of memorizing Sanskrit verses. Because if you're pronouncing the verses wrong and then you memorize it wrongly, then that's going to stay with you for life. Then it's going to be very hard for you to change and rectify yourself when you get older. Because your brain has got so accustomed to chanting that in a certain way, it'll spontaneously come out. So when we memorize the verses, it's important to learn the proper pronunciation. So when we hear, we should hear from people, not only those who are devoted, who are bona fide, authentic, who are practicing what they're preaching, etc., but also those who pronounce the verses correctly so that we can understand how to pronounce it. Now, if you're hearing it from the right person, then we should make an effort to learn the right pronunciation. Now, sometimes devotees say that Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardana, which means his name is Janardan, Krishna's name, and he's Bhavagrahi. Bhava means our devotion, our mood of devotion. Grahi means one who accepts. So Krishna accepts the mood of our devotion. So people use this to say that even if you make some mistake, and there is a famous Sanskrit verse also about it, some of you may already know about it. Murkho vadati Vishnaya, Dhiro vadati Vishnave. Ubhayortat samam punyam bhavagrahi janardana. That's the verse. Okay? So what this verse means is, Murkho vadati Vishnaya. The fool or the uneducated person says Vishnaya when he wants to say unto Vishnu. Right? Just like we say, Om Krishnaya Namaha. So when you say obeisances to Krishna, unto Krishna, then Krishna, you transform the word, deflect the word as Krishnaya. But the same is not with Vishnu because it ends in U. So if somebody thinks that because it's Krishnaya for Krishna, for Vishnu also I should say Vishnaya, that's wrong. So Dhiro Vadati Vishnave. So Dhira means the learned person pronounces correctly and he says Om Vishnave Namaha, not Om Vishnaya Namaha. So there is one person pronouncing it wrong, the other person pronouncing it correctly, but Ubhayor Tat Samam Punyam, but for both of them equal benefit is attained if they are both very devoted and faithful and sincere. Why? Because Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardana. So, using this verse, this is a very important verse for us because ultimately this is our principle. We are devotees. We want to love Krishna. So, love or pure bhakti is our ultimate objective. So, everything else is secondary. So, love for Krishna and love for everything connected to Krishna, including his devotees, is of paramount importance for all of us. So, yes, it is a fact that we have to give primacy to devotion, and even if perhaps there are some other defects, then it doesn't really matter so much when there is devotion. At the same time, when there is devotion, would one not try to do whatever one is doing for Krishna very nicely? Let us say somebody is, cooking for Krishna in the deity kitchen, yes? And if that person says, well, I don't know how to cook for Krishna, but Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardana, so I'll cook any which way, and then it's okay, I'll just offer it to Krishna. So if that person genuinely has devotion, that devotee will make an attempt to learn how to cook nicely. That devotee will learn the method of cooking, learn about various ingredients, learn various recipes, and take pains to learn, and then they will practice. Because I'm doing it for Krishna, so I must do it right. I must do the best possible cooking I can. So I have to struggle. So similarly it is with pronunciation. We should not make an excuse that, well, I didn't learn it when I was small, when I was young, so it doesn't matter, I'll just pronounce the verses like that, in any way that just comes to my mouth. Of course, we should remember that there are cultural problems, and even after our best effort, we are still not able to pronounce perfectly, then never mind. Then the Bhavagrahi Janardana verse comes into play. The Bhavagrahi Janardana verse does not come into play when there is lack of effort on our part. If after learning cooking to the best of my ability, I've worked really hard, and then in the process of cooking there's a mistake and something happens, then I offer it and I discover later, then Krishna will forgive, he will accept. Because he's accepting the devotion with which I have offered it to Krishna. So similarly with pronunciation of the Sanskrit verses, one must try to learn the proper way to pronounce, one must practice it, one must put effort into it, and after that, because of cultural conditioning, one is still not able to do it, fine, it's all right. Then Krishna will accept your mood of devotion, it's okay. But our effort must be there, that's the point. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, 70th verse, Krishna says that one who studies this sacred literature, this conversation between you and me, O Arjuna, actually worships me with intelligence. Now, we know of different types of worship. There is worship with the ghee lamp, there's worship of the deity. Yes, there's one kind of worship. So worship can be done in so many different ways. And interestingly, one of the ways of worshipping Krishna is to study and recite and chant his messages, like the Bhagavad Gita and so on. So Srila Sridhar Swami, the great commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam, who has also commented on the Bhagavad Gita, says that one who sings this holy and blessed divine discourse in the meter in which it is supposed to be chanted, that is the Anushtup meter in most cases in the Bhagavad Gita, actually, even without fully understanding it, pleases the Lord, because the Lord as a super soul within the heart actually hears it and he receives it. The Lord becomes very pleased, and the Lord approaches that person who chants and recites in this manner. Just like if we, Sridhar Swami says, if we call out somebody's name, even if that person doesn't know us so well, he will still come to us and say, yes, what is it you want? So similarly, when we chant Krishna's names and we recite his messages like the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc., then Krishna approaches one. Similarly, the great Keshav Kashmiri, who was delivered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, says that one who simply chants or sings only the verses pleases him very much, because he's engaging in an act of glorification of the Lord. Now, Keshav Kashmiri says that generally when we speak of studying the scriptures, like Bhagavad Gita, we speak about reading not just the verse, but understanding the meaning and then discussing the meaning, the purport of that. So this is actually what studying is about. But even if somebody doesn't go through the extensive process of studying, but simply takes only the verses and recites them, then Krishna becomes very pleased. So therefore, when we recite the verses, we make it a habit, make it your hobby to recite verses, then Krishna becomes very pleased. And of course, when we go out for speaking Bhagavad Gita to others, whether in a formal lecture or in informal conversations, it's always good to recite, to back up your statements. Srila Prabhupada frequently gave the example of a lawyer citing case law or the sections of the law to the judge to justify his case. So similarly, when we speak on the authority of scripture, like Bhagavad Gita. So we should be able to back up our statements with this. Another interesting aspect of this is mentioned by Krishna in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna discusses the three types of austerity. There is austerity of the body, there is austerity of speech, and there is austerity of mind. So when discussing austerity of speech, you know, he says that Svadhyaya Abhyasanam, or the recitation of Vedic literature, is one type or one limb of austerity of speech. So by such austerity, cultivating such austerity of speech in the mode of goodness, one actually develops one's attraction for Krishna. Again, this is what Sridhar Swami comments in the Bhagavad Gita, in his comments. So when we are actually reciting with faith, then our love for Krishna automatically grows, our attraction for Krishna grows spontaneously. We all know the pastime of the South Indian Brahmana in Sri Rangam, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went there, and this Brahmana was daily reciting the Bhagavad Gita verse by verse. And he was not able to recite properly. He was not pronouncing it properly. He was not very educated. And other people were making fun of him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there. He passed by and he noticed this. So he went to that Brahmana and said, why is it that, what are you doing here? He said, I'm reciting Bhagavad Gita. So So he said, but it seems that you don't know how to recite properly, but still you recite. So the Brahmana replied that my spiritual master ordered me to recite the chapters of the Bhagavad Gita every day. So therefore, I am reciting it out of obedience to the instructions of my spiritual master. So Mahaprabhu said, well, that's fine, but why are tears streaming from your eyes? He said, that is because when every time I chant any verse of the Bhagavad Gita, immediately the vision springs to my mind of Lord Krishna being the charioteer of Arjuna. Arjuna is a devotee or a servant of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the origin of the entire creation. But just see the nature of his love for his devotee, that he has taken on a subordinate position of being the driver or the servant of his devotee. Such is the kindness and transcendental nature of my Lord. So I am so overwhelmed by love when I think of Krishna like this that I can't hold back my tears. So he was regularly reciting all the verses every single day. So this is a perfect example of the fountain, springing from the heart and enveloping the entire consciousness. So even though he didn't understand the meaning of the words, but because those words were transcendental, and because he was chanting with such faith, and because he was being instructed by a bona fide devotee of the Lord, so his practices of chanting and learning those verses actually ended up making him the topmost student of the Bhagavad Gita. And actually, Krishna appreciated that. And he told him that actually, you are the best devotee of the Bhagavad Gita. You are the biggest scholar of the Bhagavad Gita. Even though you don't know Sanskrit and you can't pronounce these verses properly, but you are much better than all these other pundits who are very proud of their scholarship. So we have to see it like that. So much more could be said about this, but I'll just briefly mention a few words about how we can memorize it. I've already referred to some part of it earlier by saying that we should first and foremost hear from devotees who are authorized, who are bona fide, and who pronounce correctly. We should hear very, very attentively, very, very carefully, every single word, at the part of every single word, including the ending, and how the words join together, how they combine together. We should learn the right melody. And nowadays, of course, there is technology, so you can pause. So every time you hear, pause the button and then repeat like that. Play it again. Pause. Chant, pause it. And in this way, you keep repeating, and compare your pronunciation with the pronunciation of that devotee. And in this way, you will refine your pronunciation skills, and at the same time, you will also learn the verses. Now, it's important to recite aloud. Well, you don't have to shout it, but at least you must hear it. It is said that when you hear your own chanting, that actually helps the memorization. So the Shravan Kirtan, if you do that properly, it's effective for memorization. Yes, so then you chant, repeat aloud after that person, and continue doing that as often as you can, as often as is necessary. Make it a regular habit. Make it like one of your favorite hobbies. And you will see there'll be a lot of benefit for this. The way some of us have learned shlokas is, apart from just reading from the book, is to write down in cards, and write down in our notebooks and diaries, and then keep it in front, and then keep on repeating that again and again and again. So that is a very nice way of learning. Another thing that's very helpful to memorize verses is that you try to understand the meaning of the verses. Even though I did mention earlier that even if you don't know the meanings, it's still powerful. But for small children, you need not teach them the meaning word by word. But for adults, it's very useful to learn the meaning. Then the memorization becomes much easier. And if you get lost sometime, you can pick up the threads from where you left off because you know the meaning now. So writing down also is good. If you want to do it as an exercise in a group of devotees, that's even better because then you don't get bored and you don't feel lonely and you don't give up after a very short time because there's everyone else there to encourage you. So in a group of devotees, that becomes Sankirtan actually. So Samyak Kirtan, perfect recitation, hearing and memorization. And also, if you like, you can rise early in the morning to do this, along with your chanting. Once you've done your chanting, then you sit down and recite these verses. It's very, very effective because in the morning, the mind is also fresh. It's the mode of goodness, so very easy to remember at that time. So please try that. Also, have a positive attitude. You know, don't be overwhelmed by the idea, oh, I've passed out of school, you know, decades ago, and I've lost touch with learning now, and I can't possibly remember all this now. It's just not possible for me. You know, don't underestimate your capacity. Have a positive attitude. You can definitely learn with effort if you do it the right way. At the same time, I will also say the converse. Do not develop a negative attitude or do not become depressed when you find that you're not able to learn the verses like some others may be able to do. We're all different individuals, we're all in our different circumstances, so it's not that everybody will be able to remember the verses identically. So don't get worried if you can't learn as many verses as somebody else is learning. You see it from your own point of view. We are doing this not to show this to others, we are doing this to please Krishna, we are doing this to purify our heart, we are doing this to develop taste for Krishna consciousness and the scriptural topics. We're doing this to develop love for Krishna. And it helps you get absorbed in the whole subject. So the techniques that we used to do when we had it in our temples here is, you know, every verse usually has four quarters. In Sanskrit, each quarter is called a pada. Or in English, when it's put in the English transliteration, it is one line, so there are four lines. So for each pada or line, you repeat that. Say you're hearing it from somebody, pause, and then say that three times or five times. Then go to the next pada or the next quarter, that's the next line. Do the same. Repeat it three times or five times. Then you recite the first two padas, that is the first half of the verse. And say that three times to five times. Then you go to the third quarter. Hear that. Say it three to five times. Go to the fourth quarter. Say it three to five times. Then the third and fourth quarter together. Say it three to five times. And then you say the whole verse five times, 10 times, 20 times, 30 times, as many times as is necessary. And remember, from your experience, for those of you who have passed out of school and college long ago, you remember the need to revise your studies, yes? You learnt everything and then the day before the exam you wanted to revise what you had studied to refresh your memory. So it's not enough to just do it in one day and then you think you've memorized the verse and then that's it, unless you're exceptionally gifted and you have some kind of photographic memory where you can just remember it like that. Some people are like that. It's always better to refresh your memory by revising it from time to time. So you can recite those verses that you had memorized earlier. And you can have a sequence in which you do that. The ones that you had memorized earlier, you do it now, and then the later ones you continue, and then the chance for refreshing them or revising them will come later. And in this way, by fresh learning and revision, you will ensure that the verses remain imprinted in your mind. And another important point that Srila Prabhupada says in one of his purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam is that when you learn these verses, a very important benefit is that if the time of death comes all of a sudden, as it indeed will for most of us, then you have the capability of spontaneously remembering or chanting some mantra, especially when you are in a time of difficulty. Srila Prabhupada especially mentions the prayers that Gajendra chanted in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was able to do that because in his previous birth as a king, he had learned all these mantras. And somehow or the other, by the Lord's grace, these mantras and prayers came to his memory all of a sudden at the time when he was in danger. And so he called out for the Lord, and the Lord reciprocated and came and saved Gajendra. So these are a few tips on memorizing verses, and I do hope that you will find it a very exciting and joyful devotional exercise. Okay, so I think I'll stop here. Have I over exceeded my time limit, or is it okay?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for this wonderful class and sharing these wonderful tips to how to memorize verses. So we are very, very grateful to you for sharing sharing with us all these wonderful insights. If by your permission, would you be comfortable to call out the names of the devotees who have memorized 50 verses of Bhagavad Gita today? And
yeah, sure.
Give the certificate.
I'll be happy to do that, no problem.
So I'm going to present the certificate on my screen. And I really request the devotees who have memorized the verses to please be keep your videos on so that see. So we'll start with, so there are 10 devotees, Maharaj, who have memorized these verses today, 9 in the previous batch, and they have not just memorized the verses, but they have understood the meaning as well, and they know the numbers also. So either way, from number to verse, verse to number, verse to meaning, meaning to verse, so really very, very exemplary. So they'll be very blessed with your encouragement and kind words. So, here's the first one. Here's the name, Maharaj.
Okay, Haili Dabhi. So, is Haili Dabhi here?
Haili, can you?
Hare Krishna.
Can others, for those who are not taking part, they can.
So, this is a wonderful certificate. This is to certify
sure.
that. Ms. Haili Dabhi has successfully memorized 50 most important verses and shlokas of Bhagavad Gita as part of the kids' bhakti classes conducted by ISKCON Tampa, Florida. She is awarded the certificate of recognition on 1st August 2021 for her special devotional qualities and exemplary spiritual qualities. Okay. So,
thank
where
you
is
so much.
Haili?
Hilly.
Yes, okay. Congratulations and Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Please continue to learn verses like this. Learn another 50 and then another 50 and another 50 and go on and on and all for the rest of your life. Okay, wonderful, very nice. Congratulations. Haili.
So, Maharaj, next is Ethereal. So she's on the screen. And
okay.